are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indy Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL, Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here on AM 1510 WWBC. We are also heard on the frequencies that are FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we're also heard on the World Wide Web right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida.
That's right, 1510wwbc.com, as well as the app as well, WWBC.
Ellen? And we are heard worldwide on the World Wide Web under CETA Media Inc. as well. And just like Paul had stated, 1510wwbc.com actually has all of our archive shows as well. And we're here on the air every single Monday. Thanks be to God, right?
That's right.
And Krishna and everybody and Buddha and everybody.
So today, this is our first show for 2022.
Yes.
And it feels good to tell our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're going on 12 years with this show.
Amazing, isn't it?
And it really fits my lifestyle very well, and yours, yeah. And our friends in Brevard, and Paul said
it. It fits yours just fine as well.
So for listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends for the first time, or for people who have been listening for years, Ellen Little O'Neill and myself.
Yes.
Ellen O'Neill and myself. Of course, you've been with me forever with the three names, so you have to forgive.
It's okay.
And we have Samantha, that guest co-host for us sometimes. Mm-hmm. This studio has become part of our life. Yes. We are very, very delighted to sit here with Paul. Thank you, Paul, for giving us the opportunity. We all know that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and we try to ensure that our tongues and our hearts say the same thing.
That's right.
Right?
Exactly right.
I see.
And it's given us a voice and an opportunity to share the great wealth of our friends, you know, their prosperity, the things that they're doing, entrepreneurs, authors, people that are making a difference in this world. So it's just so exciting every single week because, first of all, we never really know who we're going to talk to,
right,
you know, right away,
right,
because
right.
Some people cancel and stuff. So sometimes it's last minute, but it's always been a blessing every single Monday.
Right. And you know what I like about our show is we talk about things that are going on right here in Brevard County, Florida. We speak about things that are going on in our state. We speak about things that are going on in our world, and it's kind of nice to have that moderate view of the world where I am fiscally responsible and socially I care about a lot of issues. And we've had people on our show the last 12 years that spoke about the environment. We had people that spoke about public education, public housing, affordable wages. We also speak with people on our show who speak about financial literacy. I mean, we've pretty much had people that come on and speak about women's rights, which is near and dear to my heart, and raising children, mental health, mental issues, physical health, emotional health, and today's no different. Mm-hmm. Our show today is being sponsored by our very good friend, our ABWA sister, Kim Torres.
Nice. Yes, absolutely. And unfortunately, my computer's a little slow right now, but Kim is an attorney here in town,
right?
And I will pull up her bio here in just a second, and toward the end of the show, we'll talk about great Kim Torres.
Yeah, and you know, today my show today, I have a couple of really great guests, and I don't know if you got a chance to look at it, Ellen, but I've got Maya Catherine, who's calling in. She's already on the phone. She's going to be speaking about her book, and we're going to be talking about emotional health, and she is an emotional health advocate. In our second segment, we have Dahlia Litwick, who is the senior editor at Slate. And in that capacity, she's been writing their Supreme Court dispatches and jurisprudence columns since 1999. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, Harper's, The New Yorker, The Washington Post, The New Republic, and we can go on and on about her. And they're both my friends. And I think Maya Catherine is on the phone, and she's going to join us and talk to us a little bit about her book, the new year, what she expects, and we'll just start our conversation. So, Maya, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends here in sunny Cocoa, Florida.
Sita, thank you so much for having me. I'm very delighted and honored to be here.
Yeah, so where are you calling? What state are you calling in from?
New Jersey.
New Jersey. Wow, we've had a lot of guests in the past from New Jersey.
Where it's snowing right now, right?
Yeah, or probably is.
Or cold, at least.
So, like all of us, you found your voice. We all talk about life as a gift, right? We all have a talent, a gift, and an ability to connect with others. And some of us find our voices a little bit later than others. And some of us learn from our past mistakes. We learn through education. We learn through speaking to each other from each other's cultures. But we get it. Finally, we get it one day, and we're able to say, I'm going to be doing this. And you got to that point when you wrote your book. So tell us about your story and your journey and your book.
Thank you so much again for the opportunity. My book is called An Apology to My Demons. An Apology to My Demons. And the book basically follows my journey from emotional turmoil that resulted from childhood trauma and different hardships in life. So the journey from that to where I am currently, which is living from a place of joy, of empowerment. My divine feminine, you know, is all out and loose. And so living from a place of power instead of a place of pain. And the reason why I wanted to write the book is because I had seen what I call the gap. The gap, basically, for me, is the space between what the motivational quotes are telling us all the time and where we are at this point. And trying to live from that place of power, trying to live like the quotes say, for example, you know, when people show you their true colors, trust them, or everything is a lesson. It's one thing to see that on a quote, and then another thing to actually live that. And a lot of times people don't talk about, you know, the journey, the mud, the quicksand, the steps back, you know, in between point A to point B. And I wanted to make sure that I gave a voice to the struggle, and I gave a voice to the victory and the joy as well.
Yeah.
So An Apology to My Demons is basically making peace with the so-called broken parts of ourselves and realizing that nothing is broken, everything is a lesson, and we can use everything that happened to us to live in our, you know, in our power, in our best life. So that's basically what the book is about.
So you're using your past to make your present and your future what you want it to be. You're molding your future based on your past, which I think a lot of us do at some point, right?
Exactly. I say all the time, like being from, I have a Caribbean accent, so I always akin it to, for example, like using everything, like from a fruit, for example. You use the peel, you use the everything inside. So it's basically using everything that you went through in life to make you better, to bring you to where you want to be. And, you know, we don't want to be stuck in the pain. We don't want to be stuck in somebody did something to us.
You just described a coconut. You just described a coconut. You can take a coconut. And
A coconut.
You can use, I think you should use that in your motivational speaking.
Maybe I will.
Life is nothing but a coconut, because you could use you drink the water, you eat the jelly, you use the husk to make bowls and whatever. You even use the coconut branches to make a broom.
Exactly. So it's like, that's what it, and with life is the same. It's like, you know, stop having parts of our life that we are ashamed of or we hide. Everything, if something doesn't break you, it's meant to enrich you and make you stronger. So it's basically taking our power back from the pain and utilizing everything we went through to become what we want to be. So having no parts of our lives that we're ashamed of, and by having that, nobody can use it against us either. Because once you embrace everything you went through and you look at it with love, people can use that against you all they want. And you're like, well, that's how it was. Where, you know, that's what I did when I didn't know any better.
Right. It's like our parents, right? Our parents do the best they can at that time. And I do know that a lot of people hold on to the anger and the guilt, self-included at times. And, you know, you know what I said to somebody the other day? I said, I noticed, like, immigrants, when we immigrate to the United States, we're so focused on working, making something of ourselves, that we sometimes forget that our children are watching, right? And I look at my kids today and how they're raising their kids and the money and the love and the time and the effort they put into raising their kids. And then I think of myself and other people that I know from the Caribbean who came here and worked the first shift, the second shift, the third shift, two jobs, three jobs. And, you know, then the children would say, well, are you going to bring cupcakes to my school for my birthday? And we're like, no, we have to work. So, I've said to myself and my demons that at some point in life, we have to take our experience and share it with the new immigrants and say, listen, stop, smell, and think. Smell the coffee.
Exactly.
You're brewing it. So what do you say to the people who are still carrying around that emotional pain of the past?
Well, that brings me to two important points. You know, I spoke recently to the youth, right? And the youth is very important to me. A lot of those hardships came during my youth. So I tell people, our youth is so resilient and amazing, but they also need our support. You know, we don't have, a lot of times we don't have what we used to have before, which is the grandparents at home to teach, you know, to teach about life. The grandparents are working too.
Yeah.
So everybody's working. So I said, you know, we have to kind of step back and realize that it's a different world. And, you know, so it's two things. It's that, you know, taking the time to speak to the youth and to explain to them, you know, things, you know, things that you go through don't have to break you. You know, I went through this too. Sharing our stories, like you said. I went through this too, and this is how I worked through it. And the second thing, you know, is forgiveness. You know, forgiving your parents now that you see how life is. Forgiving your parents and forgiving yourself. Like you were saying, sometimes, you know, go back and say, stop. But one of the big parts of my book is self-forgiveness and self-acceptance. Like Maya Angelou says, when we know better, we do better. And a big part of healing our demons is stop being so hard on ourselves. And forgiveness of others and forgiveness of ourselves. And, you know, the reason why it's called an apology to my demons, because, you know, I have a letter in the book, is that I had to go and tell them, stop criticizing myself for, like you said, the mistake of working too much or the mistake of not realizing, you know, that the kids also needed to be provided for, but also, you know, mentally, emotionally supported. Like a lot of times, you know, growing up, parents focus on providing. That's what they're taught, right? Just be provider.
Right,
and
so
they weren't taught that either, you know.
That's right. It's all about environment. We are the environment in which we live in. And so it's like monkey see, monkey do, right? That's what the saying was back home. So tell me, who are your demons in your book? You say that you have to apologize to your demons, and they're a big part of your book. Is it your feelings, or is it the people in your life, or is it the feeling that you had?
Well, the demons actually are all of that. In the book, I characterize my demons as every part of your past and of yourself that you are not proud of or you are ashamed of. So that can include things that people did to you. For example, you know, in my book, I talk about body image. Growing up, I got a lot of negative comment about body image because I was a little round, right? So that there's two demons there. There's the demon of the pain that, you know, why would somebody say that to me? And also the demon of me not loving my body and then doing things that are not productive to try to be in the body that I think I should be. For example, not eating properly. You have, you know, toxic eating behaviors, toxic eating patterns. And so many youth and adults, you know, go through that trying to fit into an image that we think we should be because of
other people.
Yeah, And also, too, because of what we believe for ourselves based on that. Because, like I said, we have responsibility, too. You know, there's one thing about the environment, but there's another thing about what do you think of yourself. And as a child, unfortunately, most of the influence comes from the outside. But as we become adults, we have a responsibility in our self-image as well. So the demons here are a combination of, you know, the pain of others and also the self, you know, toxic mechanisms that we develop. For example, not trusting people or not loving our bodies and not wearing certain clothes, you know, depriving ourselves of the things that we love because we feel like we don't look good or it's not going to be good. So the demons are a combination of all of those things.
Yeah. Sounds like the demons were shaming you a lot, too.
Absolutely. And in the book, I really, really stress some feelings like guilt, shame, that are so toxic and so much of us, so many of us carry it, we don't even know. We think of, you know, mental health, emotional health as, you know, people who go to therapists or people who have like big issues. We don't realize it's everyday people. For example, you know, eating the muffin in the car, but eating the salad in the cafeteria, you know, because they don't want people to know, you know, or eating the...
You just described me. The way home. I would do that.
Yeah, but
I used to do that too.
But there is a...
I used to do that too, and part of healing is honesty. And like I said, that's the reason why my book and my message is different. I don't sugarcoat things. And I put myself out there. I said, you know, these are the things people don't talk about, but I talk about it because, you know, after COVID, a lot of people experience mental health, emotional health, and it's time for people to start understanding you don't have to live hiding parts of yourself or hating parts of yourself anymore. You don't have to do that. And there are a lot of us like you, like me, that champion emotional health, but we go through that too. We're not trying to hide and say we're the best, you know.
Yeah, I think Ellen wants to jump in here. My co-host Ellen is dying to jump in here. Go ahead, Ellen.
You actually said it so beautifully. It's the honesty for ourselves, you know. And we experienced this year where people were shamed because of medical choices or because of political choices, and all of a sudden now my opinion doesn't matter anymore because I don't agree with the masses, or I don't you know. And it's I'm not speaking that just for me, I'm speaking that for all of my friends too, who, you know, kept in the closet and really weren't honest with who they were or what they were about or how they wanted to go forward. And they're fantastic people. You know, they should love themselves because they're great. Just because they have a different opinion than us doesn't make them any less lovable or any less perfect.
Well, it's all about self-love, right? I think, Maya, what...
That's perfect.
So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with the author, Maya Catherine. And she knew she had a calling, and she was always able to figure out people and always try to cipher things out herself. And then she put it all into her book. And it's more about healing emotional wounds from her childhood and things that happened in her life. So we're just happy to have you on the show with us. But now you talk a lot about self-love and self-acceptance. But, you know, that is a very difficult thing for so many people to accept because they have this block in their brain that just won't allow it. How would you describe how you were able to let that flow into your body, mind, and spirit?
Thank you. That's such a beautiful question. Thank you so much. I had heard somewhere, I think it was Beyonce, but I'm not sure. Somebody said, everything we experience in life is seen through the lens of our self-love. The way we see ourselves affects every single experience we have in life. And I believe that's true. Everything is, you know, you go into life, you know, as a fighter, fighting everything, not trusting everything, based on how you see yourself. You go into, for example, an interview. If you're confident, you go in an interview with your head high and knowing that you got it. If you don't feel good about yourself, it's half the battle is over because you already go there thinking you're not good enough. So self-love is a word that a lot of people use. And some people equate self-love to buying things for yourself that you like or giving yourself this material thing and that. And I tell people self-love is tough love. And self-love for me and the book took like, you know, two different things. So self-love meant stop accepting being so in so much emotional turmoil. Stop accepting having to hide, you know, it in the car. Stop accepting not being happy. Stop accepting, you know, not being able to sleep because of, you know, thinking about all the traumas I've been through. So I had to stop accepting not living with joy and love and energy, you know, because a lot of times, like, those issues make you depressed and you lose energy. So I had to love myself enough to say, I don't want to live like this.
Yeah, so yeah. Well, I think, yeah, you get to that point, right? So you've been speaking with a lot of groups and organizations, and so tell us a little bit about the groups and the people, and are they receptive?
Oh, thank you so much for that. So the other day I spoke to the Boys and Girls Club, which, you know, one of the girls sent me a little an email saying, you know, Maya Catherine, like, we go through things as teens, and sometimes it makes us, you know, not confident, and thank you so much for your message. And that just got to tears. And I've also spoken to an addiction recovery suicide prevention program in Vermont via radio, just like this one. And, you know, I have been blessed that people now are giving emotional health. It's just due, and they recognize the importance of it. So I've been speaking to things like domestic violence groups, women's groups, and I'm very grateful that, you know, people are recognizing the need to speak about those things that we don't really speak about that much. And, you know, it's like fuel for me, you know, as far as, you know, the fear I had to overcome to put my scars and myself out there.
We thank you, because, you know,
so brave. I mean, and
yeah,
courageous,
because,
for you,
you know,
to do that.
People coming from the Caribbean, I mean, we've had issues that we were not able to talk about when we were children, because it was swept under the carpet, like domestic violence, for example. It became so normal that the man would overpower and be in control, and the woman would have to, you know, basically go through this challenge, and they said deal with it, because, number one, you had children, there were no shelters, there were no place to go, nobody really wants you and your children, so you had to stay in the situation. And it was traumatic. It's still traumatic for me as a remembering the woman in our village who would be screaming in the nights because they were being beaten by a drunken husband, or maybe a husband that came home and just for no reason things were out of place in the house, or, you know, whatever it was. But I can still hear those screams, and I don't think those women ever got a chance to talk about it the way you have in your book, you know?
Exactly, and that's why I want to give a voice to the voiceless, you know? I want to give a voice to the voiceless, because even me, I didn't talk for a while either. You know, I always tell people I had a good upbringing. I just didn't say a lot of things. You know, a lot of things in my book that I went through, for example, you know, violations of body, I went through that, and I never said anything. You know, my father passed away not knowing. My mom, I only saw her a couple of years ago. And a lot of times, you know, we keep silent because we're ashamed. We think it's our fault. We don't want to look damaged. We don't want to look broken. We don't want people to judge us. So we stay quiet. And I'm like, you know, this is the end of that. This is the time where, you know, people can say, this is my story, and it is what it is, and I'm still strong, and I'm still beautiful, but this is part of my story, and I want to give a voice to that.
Well, I want
to
give a voice to that. You found your way home, and that home is a beautiful place. It's a place where you have accepted yourself for who the good Lord made you to be, and I think, you know, God works through all of us in some ways to give us the voice, and we are a vehicle of some sort to carry the message. So where can we find your book? Where can our listeners find your book?
Thank you so much. So the book is on Amazon, .com, of course. It's on BarnesandNoble.com. I think it's on Walmart.com. But Amazon is really, you know, where I published it. So so you could find it on Amazon. And again, it's called An Apology to My Demons. And you could also find, you know, my website, author Maya Catherine, AUTHORMAIYA, Catherine, KATHERINE.com. And then on social media, it's either Maya Catherine or author Maya Catherine. So thank you for asking that.
Yeah, so
and
when,
I have
so,
all of that information posted on our Facebook page as well.
I have a quick question. So when you're not writing, do you have a day job as well? Because you sound like you've been around and done a lot of stuff.
Yes, I kind of keep that to myself, but yes, my goal, and that's not my goal, I am getting to where I can not only make a living, I don't like to say make a living,
yes.
I can afford the life that I want based on my book and my speaking engagements. That's where I see my life going. So right now, in this process, though, I still maintain another, you know, work, which, you know, I'm very grateful for.
Multiple streams of income is not a bad thing.
Ellen taught me that, because I am a nurse, I'm an author, I'm an activist, I'm a radio show host, I'm a mom, I'm a grandma, I'm a neighbor.
Yes.
I used to write for a local paper, and you know what? All of this combined has made me who I am, and I absolutely love that energy that I keep putting out, because God gives it back to me tenfold.
Love every role that you have.
And I wanted to say something to you, Sita. Like, I always tell people that when I do interviews, but let me just say that. I always tell people, thank you for having the courage to follow your life passion, because by doing that, you inspire and people to do the same, and you also give people the space to do the same. So if it wasn't for you and your team having this show, I wouldn't be here speaking. So thank you for whatever you had to go through your life to be able to be here today to give a voice to my story. And you don't know who's listening right now. That's gonna, you know, that's like you say, in a domestic violence situation, or that feels ashamed, that says, you know what, I can have those scars and still thrive.
But we will definitely be supporting you. We will definitely be supporting you, Maya Catherine. And we have all of this information is shared on our Facebook page, as well as our website, SitaMediaInc.com. And all the shows are posted. We're going to take a quick commercial break, listen to our sponsors, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Christen Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super Savings Sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9. Mattress and furniture. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast Urgent Care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MEDFAST, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low cost sandwiches and baskets to high end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group, On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, FM 100.7,
yeah.
And geez, all over the world.
All over the world. 50,000-watt station goes from Daytona to Orlando all the way down to parts of St. Lucie County. It's awesome. And we, again, 12 years on the air, Sita, with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Fantastic guests, just like we had on our first segment with Maya Catherine, our author. And now we have on the phone our your good friend, Dahlia Lithwick.
That's right.
Canada.
And so for our listeners who are tuning in, we sit here every Monday and we speak about kitchen table topics, things that are going on around the nation, around the world, right here in Brevard. And you know, Ellen, I have to say, I had this conversation with somebody at the gym this morning, and this lady was saying, well, you know, so many people are registered to vote and they don't vote, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, everybody's family should have an Auntie Maxine. There should be someone in the family that goes around at the birthday parties, the anniversaries, even when someone dies and there's a gathering, and say, are you registered to vote? And if they are, if there aren't, say, why not? And then you go through the whole spiel. Do you care about the environment? Do you care about public education? Do you care about homelessness? Do you care about affordable wages? Do you care about women's rights? Mm-hmm. Do you care about the rights for our daughters and our sons? And you know what? Before you know it, you'll have the whole gang going to register to vote. Even on a Sunday, they'll be lining up to wait for Monday morning.
That's right.
Because we should care about life is politics. From the diapers you wear when you're born to the briefs you're buried or cremated in. Mm-hmm. It is everything.
It really
and
is.
On you know, I find people that are like-minded, just like myself, to call in on our show. And it's no different today. I have this lovely lady, Dahlia Lithwick. She is the senior editor at Slate. And in that capacity, she's been writing their Supreme Court Dispatches and Jurisprudence column since 1999. Her work has appeared in the New York Times, Harper's, The New Yorker, The Washington Post, The New Republic. And Dahlia, I know you're on the phone, so welcome to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and thanks for taking the time to call in on your busy day.
Oh, Sita, it's so nice to be among you and your friends, and I'm just delighted. I'm delighted to ring in the new year with you.
Yeah, me too. This is our first show for 2022, and it's just to have somebody who thinks like me and cares about the issues like I do, it's just amazing. And I want to let you know that this morning I sent my daughter, who is an attorney in Orlando, I sent her a little message that you were calling into my show, and I sent her your bio. And this is what she wrote back. Dahlia Lithwick? Question mark, exclamation, 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 exclamation. I love her, exclamation mark. She came to speak to my class at UVA Law. Tell her she spoke to your daughter, which is Jasmine, public service class at UVA Law. And then I said, yeah, that's her. And she wrote back, Mom, she is well known and very important in the legal world. How did you get so lucky? So my daughter Jasmine is one of your cheerleaders.
Well, thank you. I'll tell you a secret, which is that over Christmas break, Mindy Kaling's show, The Sex Lives of College Girls, which I confess I have not watched, but there was a funny line where one of the young women on the show is trying to brag about how she spent her summer, and she says, I had an internship with Dahlia Lithwick at Slate, and everybody I know who has a 16-year-old daughter freaked out. I know your daughter's older than that,
yeah.
But suddenly, for for 10 glorious seconds, I was a meme. And then went away. But it was very thrilling.
A meme. Jeez.
Well, you graduated.
Yeah.
All the wonderful things you did, but the meme is, that's the big one.
I just watched them. Don't I just
that's
watched
them. That's the one that gets your old college roommates.
That's right.
In, right?
Exactly. You know what?
You
I just watched them.
25 years.
I watched a show, Don't Look Up, and I saw some of the memes that they made with the actress, I forgot her name, you know, Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
And I was cracking up. I'm like, look at the culture we live in now where everything is a meme, right? It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's
yep.
crazy. So, you know, you and I think alike, and I think almost 99.9% of my friends, I'm like, I don't understand when people say, I don't get involved in politics, I don't get involved in my community, I don't get involved in what's happening with women's rights, I don't get involved with wages, I just don't get involved because I don't have the time. And I'm like, well, we ought to make the time because life is politics. From the day you leave the hospital as a baby, as a newborn, do you have health care? Does your parents have health care? Do they have a place for you to live? Do they have food at home? Is there someone who's going to be watching you while your parents work? Are they wealthy enough to hire a nanny? I mean, life is this, right? And it really bugs me when people say, well, I don't care. And I look at them and I say, well, our democracy is right now is in a bad place and you should care. So what would you say to people who say the same things?
I mean, I get it, right? And I think COVID exacerbated it because we're all just trying to get, you know, our kids through school and to adjust to this new reality. And, you know, I would say the 4 years, you know, when Donald Trump was in office, where we had to like run around chasing every tweet and get up at 5 a.m. and find out, you know, policy changes. Look, it's exhausting.
Yes.
And so I really, really do understand that people feel depleted and they feel as though politics is just, you know, both sides are the same and the whole thing is just the fix is in and nobody in Washington cares about me. I mean, all of that is rational, but I think that your point is exactly right, which is politics, first of all, isn't just what happens in politics. Politics is your school board and politics is your lieutenant governor and politics is, you know, every single person on your city council, so that politics is really local and really urgently important. And second, like you just said, politics affects every single piece of your life. It's the water you drink, and it is, you know, the hours you work, and the wages you get, and the protections you have at work. It's everything. And so I think that, in a way, what you're hearing, what I'm hearing across the country, is just exhaustion and frustration and a sense that this is all just nothing and meaningless. And at the same time, politics could not be more urgently important than it is right now. And I think that sort of living on the theme of those two things, that people are frustrated and exhausted, and also that if you check out, you're part of this kind of general nihilist view that nothing matters, I think that's the theme we're all on right now.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like we are living in a world where our democracy is in peril, because I feel like right somehow is now wrong, and what was up is now down, and it's like, where, what has happened to the moderate voices? I mean, it's like, it used to be that people would be able to discuss politics, life issues, and agree to disagree respectfully and peacefully and walk away. But this year and last year and the last couple of years, I have to say maybe last 3-4 years, families have broken up. Friends have broken up. It's like, dude, what's happening? Why can't we just talk about something and be able to learn from each other and say, okay, well, let me listen because I might learn something, you know?
I think that's right. And I think that's attributable to a couple of things. One is, and here I just have to cop to it as a journalist, I mean, I think the media has played a really big role in polarizing the national conversation about politics. I think that, you know, Twitter and Facebook and the fact that more and more people are getting their news from illegitimate sources that are not, you know, in the truth-seeking business. I mean, all of that rewards extreme and I think very negative discourse. And so you're completely right, because there's this huge bulge in the middle of popular opinion that is sort of moderate and sane and trying to do the right thing, and that is not represented by the loudest voices, you know, in the media, and whether that's like online or on TV. So I think that's a problem, that the media is really colluding with this trend to pull us apart.
Yeah, because it looks like extremism on the left and the right makes money for certain people.
It absolutely makes money, and advertisers reward it. And I say that as somebody, you know, who goes on television very regularly, that you will, you know, become a YouTube or a meme or, you know, go viral for saying the most explosive and often negative thing. Nobody wants to hear, particularly from me, you know, when I talk about legal issues, well, on the one hand, on the other, you know, here's the temperate, moderate position. That just doesn't make anybody happy. And so I think that there is a real tendency to reward extreme discourse and you know, kind of punishing behavior. And then I just think the other part of it really is that we really succumbed, I think, to the politics of ugliness and otherness. That I think that more and more we hear leaders saying horrible, hateful, dehumanizing things. And that, too, is rewarded. And so I think that in a way, you know, you can have like an existential conversation about whether the media is driving politics or politics is driving the media. But the fact is that it's become very, very costless to say shocking, hateful, racist, xenophobic, misogynist, you know, you can name it, things, and there's no cost. And in fact, frequently that is great for filling your coffers as an elected official. So I think everything is pulling in the direction of extreme polarization, and you're very right. I think that the thing that has fallen out in discourse is the tendency to give the other side the benefit of the doubt.
That's right, and it used to be like that. Like this morning I read on one of the news outlets, it said that last year at this time there were 823,000 Americans filing new jobless claims each week. And this last week, the number was 200,000. Now, that's historic progress, right? But you don't hear about it like in big, bold letters anywhere, because it's boring news. But you'll hear about, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene being banned from Twitter is everywhere, you know?
I think that's right, and it takes us back right to where you started, Sita, which is why folks don't vote. And I think it's because the whole conversation around voting, the stuff that I write about week after week, you know, whether it's voter ID or gerrymandering or, you know, new bills that are going into effect that give an immense amount of power to partisan entities, all of that stuff is boring, right? It's just procedural and it's dry and it doesn't change from week to week and there's no kind of big personalities. And so with really very few exceptions, stories about voting and how voting is going to be sort of determinative in 2022 and 2024 and that efforts to kind of choke off the popular vote are happening, you know, in most of the states. And the conversation around what happened in the 2022 election, all of that is just kind of like wallpaper, right? Because what's really interesting, as you say, is Marjorie Taylor Greene and her Twitter account. And I think that in a weird way, people need to kind of like eat their vegetables, which is like all the boring process news, along with the exciting memes.
Well, it's a balance,
and,
right?
You know,
it's
the Jennifer Lawrence stuff.
Right. Yep. It's like a balance. And, you know, I just want our listeners to know we're speaking with Dahlia Lidwick, who is a senior editor at Slate. And in that capacity, she's been writing their Supreme Court dispatches and jurisprudence columns and things. And in addition to that, Miss Dahlia, I'm so amazed that you're my friend. It warms my heart. In 2018, you also received the American Constitution Society Progressive Champion Award and the Hillman Prize for Opinion Analysis. You also won the National Magazine Award for your columns about the Affordable Care Act. Thank God. A lot of us supported President Obama with that. And you have been awarded twice the Online Journalism Award for legal commentary. I know Ellen is dying to ask you a question because we're feeling like you're sitting here and we're in law class. We're learning.
Well, you know, I wanted to, because you do have, and you also have a podcast too. Is that correct? Are you still doing the podcast?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And
where does she find
folks
time?
I want to listen yesterday's it's called Amicus, Amicus, and our podcast this weekend was with Sherilyn Ifill, who is just stepping down as the head of the NAACP's Legal Defense Fund. So she's been arguing all of these sort of racial voting cases for years, and it's just an amazing conversation with a woman who, oh my God, she should be a household name. She's incredible. So it's Amicus, and folks should just listen to Cheryl and just drop the truth. It's unbelievable.
Well, and I will make sure that all of our listeners get a chance and opportunity to tune into that. We'll post that on our Facebook page as well as our information. But let's talk a little bit about Supreme Court reform. And what are your thoughts about, what are some of the things, the judiciary matters that we should be talking about with Supreme Court reform?
It's kind of a great question, Ellen, and it's the thing that I wish, again, when we talk about eating our vegetables, that people were really more kind of concerned about what's happening at the Supreme Court, because this term alone, we are going to see, you know, two massive reproductive rights cases are going to really, really change the shape of women's freedoms. We have a massive gun case that's going to come down in June that will, I think, profoundly change the scope of the Second Amendment. We have a church-state funding case that's coming down, and the court this week is going to hear a huge, huge pair of cases about the vaccine mandate. So in a weird way, and I guess this goes to CETA's initial framing, if you care about the environment, if you care about workers' rights, if you care about women's rights, if you care about the economy, like, the court is involved in all those things. And so just as to the question about court reform, Joe Biden, when he was campaigning, said after Amy Coney Barrett was seated and she was kind of rushed onto the bench, just even voting had already started in the 2022 election, and he had said he was going to at least consider expanding the Supreme Court. What he did was he created a commission, a very, very impressive blue ribbon panel of a whole bunch of the smartest constitutional lawyers in the country, including Sherilyn Ifill, by the way, from the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. And they produced a report that came out just a few weeks ago that more or less came to the conclusion that most of the big court reform proposals that are out there, including expanding the size of the court from 9 people to more, or having term limits so that justices don't sit for 30, 40 years, or jurisdiction stripping, which basically means the court can't decide certain kinds of cases, the court reform commission more or less said, probably not. So I think it was a kind of a dispiriting moment for people who really do believe that we're going to live under the shadow of Donald Trump's 3 Supreme Court appointments for the next 20 or 30 years and that there's not much to do about it. So I think that in the short answer is that certainly that commission didn't come to any sort of urgent aggressive proposals about what needs to happen. And I think the ball then goes to kind of the American public to think about whether they're happy with how the Supreme Court is deciding these big, big questions. And I guess I would just conclude the answer by saying that the polling that is coming out this fall around the popularity of the Supreme Court shows that the court has the lowest approval ratings in the history of polling. About the court. So it's in the high 30s, low 40s. That's a 20-point drop in just a few years. And so I think that the American public is quite frustrated with the John Roberts Court, but not quite sure what to do about it.
Well, you know, that's why I say, you know, voting has consequences.
Yeah.
And I speak with a lot of people who are, you know, pro-choice and pro-life and whatever. And this is how I speak to them. I say, listen, you know, when a little baby is born, you know, you have to start thinking, I mean, do you really support that child from the womb to the tomb? Because if you do, that child is going to be a toddler, then it's going to be, you know, a child in elementary school, then middle school, then high school, then it needs a job, and the parents need to take care of the kid. So don't get involved in people's personal business if you're not going to be voting that way. And that brings me to our next question is, I mean, I believe that many politicians, once elected, they're just thinking about re-election. I'm not sure where we as citizens lost that messaging that you need to pay attention to who you're voting for, because a lot of these people only care about re-election. I feel like Democrats are very bad at messaging, and they don't get their messages out in the right time for the right person in the right place. How do we get more people to stay involved, engaged, and pay attention to who they're casting that vote for?
I think that's the question we have to be thinking about right now, and especially as we're kind of coming up on the one-year anniversary of January 6th and the storming of the Capitol that, you know, resulted in fatal consequences for some people. And I think that, you know, the nut of your question is, how do we turn politics from something that is increasingly lawless, that is increasingly, as you said, polarizing and divisive, and that is convincing a lot of people either to tune out, which, as we both agreed at the beginning, is really awful, or to just kind of turn to their own vigilante ideas about, you know, if politics isn't going to serve me, then I'm going to just pick up a gun and do what I want. And I think that that's kind of the cliff we're heading off. And it really is, I think, the challenge of our time to convince people that if you care about civility, if you care about decency, if you care about, you know, communities as opposed to just self and public health and whatever it is, then you got to kind of put down the guns and put down the sharp words and work together. And that's what government is meant to do. And so I think that it's both a challenge to politicians to be better, right? To do better.
And to be kinder, to be kinder, to be gentler, to
honest.
To include and not, people. And, yeah. And actually, I mean,
honesty would be awesome. Well, I mean, I'm not looking for transparency. I don't know if we could ever get to transparency, but let's at least the facts that are supposed to come out, let them come out. Because I have a tough time, I'll be honest with you, Dahlia, I have a tough time figuring out what news sources to go to. Because the ones that I think are supposed to be great don't always turn out so great.
And I think that that's really on us in journalism, is to be a part of the solution and not part of the problem. But I also think it means that as readers and listeners and consumers of news, we have to be willing to pay, first of all, because the more we get free news and the more truth is behind paywalls, the more we're going to get bad, unsourced news. And I think that means we do have to pay for our news. And I know that sucks, but there it is.
Yeah.
But I think it's also
I agree with you.
Not challenge.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, we have 3 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you really quick. You've been a frequent guest on the Rachel Maddow Show, and I love her. Tell us your experience on MSNBC when you first met Rachel Maddow. Because I just
this is a total 16-year-old girl question.
Yeah, because I just read something about her, and I was like, oh my god, I love her even more. The article spoke about when she gets on air, it's all about the news, and she does not look at herself in the mirror. She just go focus right on to what she has at hand. And I know you've been a part of her show, so tell us a little bit about that.
No, I mean, I would say two things. I think hers is the only show that I go on, and no matter how many conversations I've had with the bookers in the hours before, she comes at it brand new. There's not a single canned question that someone else wrote for her. Often when I'm sitting on the set, she's like striking out questions and writing new ones as she goes. She is a consummate professional. And I'll just tell you one other quick thing, which is I was on when my then 12-year-old son had his wisdom teeth out. And I said to her, oh, Rachel, you know, I'm so sad because my son only drank mushed squash soup out of the Rachel Maddow mug. And he has a bad memory, and so he doesn't want to have the blue mug anymore. And she literally just looked around the set and said, someone get Dahlia's son a red mug. And so they ran and scrambled and found new memory-free, happy mug that he cherishes. And so that's the kind of person she is.
Yeah, and, you know, when Ellen said that about the news, she's right away. But I have found personally that Rachel Maddow, when she talks about stuff, it's usually 90%, 99% truth. Because I do follow up. And for a news junkie like myself, which my 8 televisions in my house is either on CNN, MSNBC. Once in a while, I'll switch to Fox just to hear something. But I do read a lot, and I do read Slate.com, and I do read The Hill, and I do read a lot, and I get my news from different sources. But I think everything in life comes back to one thing. Do you want a more kinder, peaceful, generous, loving world? Do we all want a world where everybody have a fair share? Do we want a world where all cultures are accepted? And yes, they're bad guys, and we agree they should be locked up or they should be held accountable. But do we want to live in a world where if there's a law, we follow the law? And there are people that feel that they are above the law. So why do we have a Supreme Court and a Circuit Court and all these other judicial people if people just feel like they can do as they please? You know?
Yep. And I think that, as we keep saying, that's kind of going to be the question going forward. We have to rededicate ourselves to being part of the solution and not going to sleep.
That's right. Amen. So tell us where we... Now, you're publishing a book, but you also have more coming. So we have 20 seconds left. Where can people find you? What is your website, or where can they find you?
They can find me at Slate.com, and that's where they'll find my legal writing and the podcast Amicus. And the book is called Lady Justice, and it's coming out in September from Penguin Press. And so they can jump on their favorite book buying website and pre-order now. And thank you, thank you, thank you for helping push that out.
Thank you so much, Dahlia. Thank you so much for being with us today. And for our first guest that was on, we thank Maya Catherine for coming on as well. And we also would like to thank one of our sponsors of today's show, Kim Torres with Torres Mediation Services. She has a office right here on O'Galley Boulevard, and she is one of our ABWA sisters. Thanks again for tuning in here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends each and every Monday here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC.
The preceding program may not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of WWBC.